Ave Maria Radio and Renewal Ministries presents Fire on the Earth, a compelling look at the new evangelization through inspiring teachings, interviews, and testimonies. Here's your host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome, friends. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. We're here again today with Tim Glimkowski. Tim's a young man living in Illinois. Is that right?
Yeah, the western suburbs of Chicago.
Western suburbs, married. Has two lovely children, a lovely wife, Maggie. And Tim has launched a new ministry called Lalto Catholic Institute. And it's really about the work of evangelization, disciple-making, helping Catholics and parishes embrace the fundamental call to respond to the Lord with all their heart and seeking holiness and mission and how to live that out today. The call is there, but it's a hard thing to do. And Tim's really got a gift and a calling to help people get there. Tim's going to be with us for a few days. And yesterday, if you didn't have a chance to tune into the program, he was sharing his story, which is a very inspiring one. If you didn't hear it, you can go to our website at renewalministries.net. The testimony will be right there in the archive, or you can download it and listen to it on whatever device works for you to listen to it at your convenience. There's so many devices that are out there. But welcome back, Tim.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's good to be here again.
Yeah, I feel like a dinosaur sometimes when I talk about devices. I don't hardly use it. I got a phone. That's about it.
But I can't keep up either. Yeah. I'm officially starting to get to the spot where different apps and stuff, like I can't figure out Snapchat. My little brother and sister are all about it. And
I'm getting
to that point.
Yeah, you need a seven-year-old to kind of show you how to do it all, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we ended by the way, thanks for yesterday's program. I really enjoyed listening to your story. It was a beautiful story of conversion and kind of the anatomy of a conversion, you might say.
Yeah, dissecting.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, it was helpful. But before we talk about the ministry, which we'll get to this week for sure, I'd like you to maybe to build on where we left off yesterday, bring our friends up to speed, kind of where we left off, and then kind of the journey of discipleship that unfolded for you.
No, that's good. Yeah, I'm glad to continue talking about kind of what the Lord did in my life, because, I mean, that is part of what we're trying to do with parishes, is help them to walk with people through the whole process instead of just offering one-off moments or kind of disjointed ministry, to really look at the process of discipleship and conversion and kind of adequately meet those needs in people. For me, it's actually funny. So I spoke yesterday about my kind of moment of encounter with Jesus happened at a Steubenville conference. And even though it took me about a year to really have the strength to make the decision to go all in and to really like begin following Christ, I knew what I was supposed to do, but it was just like I couldn't quite let go of the things that I was living for outside of that. But during that year, my senior year in high school, that I was kind of wrestling with this question of kind of, am I going to give my life to Christ? I did apply and was accepted and was planning on going to Franciscan University of Steubenville. So I think, you know, I tell people that sometimes because I'm at these high school parties, just living a completely antithetical life to the gospel. But like, I'm going to Steubenville, you know, because I think there was something I saw there where it's like, this is what I want. I want to be surrounded by this community and be in this culture. There was a joy that I sensed in people, you know, the Holy Spirit, and knew that I wanted it. And so you know, after I started in the fall of 2007 at Franciscan. And I think one of the things that has become in my mind, like what Father Mike created at Franciscan that was so compelling to me, was there was a culture of discipleship built into like the fabric of life there. Like there's that classic saying in kind of business and stuff, culture eats strategy for breakfast, right? Like this idea that whatever the culture is of your organization is going to really drive behaviors and drive people's experiences of your organization more than just you're saying, we're going to do these things. Like there's an underlying culture there. And the culture at Franciscan was so edifying that walking into it right away, you couldn't help but be compelled by, well, after the noon mass, first there's incredible singing and everyone is praying with their heart. Like, what is it? What is it like to experience a mass where it's not like 90% of people are kind of semi-engaged, disengaged, but are actively praying, encountering the Lord, and then kneeling after mass is over to actually thank the Lord? Like, how did that begin to form and shape my 18-year-old mind to understand what it meant to live for Christ? Like, that culture was so compelling.
So you're talking about even daily masses there that were packed with students.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's the 6:30s packed, the noon's packed, and the 4:45s packed every day, you know, on a campus of 2,500 undergrads. Like, and I mean, that's compelling.
No, it really is. And I think you talk about culture, another way to understand is that culture is the way of life of a people or a grouping. You know, it's in some very clear way, the way Father Michael Scanlon led that university was to lay hold of answering the question, what does it mean for us as a university community to live for Christ and under the lordship of Jesus Christ? Like, how do we follow him in a total way? And what does that look like? And it wasn't like he knew it all right, but he figured it out. And they figured it out and built a way of life that students would just come into, and then it carries you, you know? I mean, you have to make decisions. You have to go after it at a certain point, right? But anyway, so how did that all unfold for you?
Yeah, so I think even the way he went about that is kind of interesting. Like, he kind of started from the ground up with the household system. You know, so a lot of the students there live in these kind of micro communities on different wings of dorms and kind of commit themselves to 4 years to, you know, in my case, growing with a certain group of other men as a household. So we were called Lion of Judah household. So Pete Barak from Renewal Ministries was in our household as well. And that, like, in a lot of ways, the system that I think accounts for the culture. Like, it wasn't like Father Mike from the top down was just like, we want to have greater Catholic identity. And so we're just going to impose these regulations. Like, every kid has to do, well, I mean, he did. He said initially everyone had to be in the household, but it was through the lens of community that he began growing people. And that to me was, there were a few, Josh Wattenbarger, if he's listening, this is a shout out, but he was a junior when I was a freshman. And there was this culture built in because of this household system where they wouldn't have even called it that necessarily at the time, but upperclassmen were actively discipling the younger grades. Like, they were showing them what it meant. And so he kind of began in a lot of ways, like, mentoring me. And then I joined the household because of him and because of his role. But that, I mean, even at later years, when I was myself an upperclassman, I remember one of the RAs of one of the dorms, her name was Christine Gregoire. She was the intramural coordinator and the RD of Marion, the resident director. I remember her challenging me, saying that she was noticing a decline in some of our class with how much we were doing that with a freshman. She was saying, we're seeing these problems with the freshman class. And, like, that's not our job. Like, that's your job as the students to mentor these young men. And I mean, that's it. Like, that's the model that they've kind of built there that really lets it be this kind of ground up.
Yeah. And you take a responsibility for the culture.
Yeah.
Right. And passing on the culture and passing on what you guys really value, right? What do we value here? And it allowed you to grow up in a leadership position too, and call you forth, which is pretty, pretty neat. You become a disciple maker. You know, first you're getting helped. Let me just ask you this. I don't need to answer the question. What did that discipling, what were the elements of the life you lived that you valued in the dorm? What did you do differently than people do other than go to mass each day?
Yeah, so there were, you know, household commitments, which I think is actually a cool aspect of the community that there was. It wasn't just like we're committing to community in some vague way, but in a sacrificial way. Like, our every Saturday afternoon is going to be spent praying together in this way, and every Wednesday night is going to be spent praying a rosary together in this way. So there were these structures to community life that I think are important for community to really flourish. But at the heart of it was kind of the twin calls of vulnerability and accountability. I'm going to open my life and my struggles, because there's not a single 18-year-old guy in the world that's a finished product, you know? And so I'm going to open my life to these other men around me, and I'm going to be loved in that, in the midst of that, vulnerably. I think that word vulnerability even comes from the Latin root is vulnus, to like woundedness, to show your woundedness, your brokenness to other people, to be loved in it, but then also be challenged in it, to be kind of accountable and held on. There was actually multiple times that certain upperclassmen, Josh and other guys, like, different things I was doing, you know, whether it's on the sports field or it's, you know, wherever. And it's kind of like, hey, that's not how we do things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And yeah. And that's when you want these cool upperclassmen guys to like you, like, that's a compelling thing, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that relationship that's present there at the heart of it. Like, there's trust and there's love. It's not just somebody that I don't know calling me on and challenging me, but brotherhood existing within the context of that, challenging to be better. And so whatever that meant for you, did that mean you needed help with your struggles with purity? Well, great. That's what, you know, household life is fitted to kind of meet everyone's need. A daily prayer routine. Is it physical fitness? You know what I mean? One of my household brothers and I, every morning we go mass, we go to breakfast together, and then we'd lift every morning. You know what I mean? Like, cause it's just, we're challenging each other to be better men every day by creating that discipline that's at the heart of discipleship. So,
yeah, we're disciple. We use it a lot. And I think a lot of Catholics don't know what it means exactly. How would you describe it? What does disciple mean?
So you could probably help me with, like,
sure,
the Greek root or whatever, what that comes from. But in my mind, like, in what's different between, like, in my life when I became a disciple versus when I just grew up kind of culturally Catholic, what were the significant differences? Were like a growing relationship with God and intimacy, where I've started to experience myself as a son of the Father instead of just, you know, somehow detached or just a kind of a, like, obedient servant somewhere. And then living under the Lordship is a phrase I think you used of Christ, where I started to attempt to conform my life morally to him, but also to begin to live in constant relationship with the Lord and with the Holy Spirit, to ask, like, what am I being challenged to do? Like, this idea that this relationship was actually growing and active within my life and was something that was effective in my daily existence. That wasn't just, I live according to my own plan and my own ideas, and then I give lip service to kind of keep on the straight and narrow at different times of my day, but that my whole existence is being informed by a calling from God to grow in holiness and then to also bear fruit.
Yeah, you know, that's so good. It's essentially to be a learner, right? So Jesus said, come follow me and learn from me.
Yeah.
Learn my life. Learn how I live. And I want you to live like I live. And so what's really great about a place like Steubenville, your experience, and you're talking about a culture, I think there's lots of people out there who try to do it on their own because that's the only option they have. They can't see around them places where there is that kind of community or culture. But you guys shared a common love that was at the heart of it. Like everybody on campus, not everybody was in the same place. Everybody's in a different place in the journey. But Father Michael kind of planted a flag in the center of the campus and says, we're going to follow the King. That's what we're going to do. We all know we're going to do it imperfectly. We know that's why we have confession. We're here to help each other. But what we know is we want to follow him. And like St. Paul says in Corinthians, you know, we make it our aim now to please the Lord. And kind of in that culture, it's a place where you're kind of asking the question, like, what does it mean to please the Lord as a student, as a football guy? Is this, that, or the other thing? You know, dating and, you know, what I do with my time, my talent, my treasure, all that. You kind of just slowly say, you know, Christianity's meant to touch every aspect of my life. And so that's kind of what was happening with you. Now, did you jump in right away when you got there? Or was it like, well, I don't want to go. Was it a gradual thing? How'd that work for you?
Yeah, definitely gradual, you know, yeah. In many ways. Like, in, as those relationships and community grew, for sure. Like, I would even say, like, my prayer life as in terms of both, like, the commitment to, like, a prayer that was actually going to be transfiguring for my own life took years. I don't think really until it was probably my sophomore year when I went to Austria in the spring. So a full couple of years after I'd been in Franciscan, that prayer life, I began to encounter, I took a Christian spirituality class, and the writings in a particular way of John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila really like made the spiritual life make sense for me for the first time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that took a while. Yeah, and every aspect that you mentioned, yeah, dating, like conforming all of those elements of your life I came in even to school as a political science major. I wanted to go to law school, which is a good thing. Could have been a great thing as a layman, but began to experience even the call to study theology and philosophy so that I could be prepared to be in full-time ministry was part of that calling that took, you know, I switched my major my sophomore year. So certainly, I think all those things that the Lord was calling me to took time to be sink in.
And so you ended up graduated in 2011 or something? Or
2011.
Okay, and then what'd you do after that? We just have a minute left. What'd you do after that?
Well, so actually, I went to work for a year for a Catholic media company and then discerned my vocation to be a priest in seminary the year after that. So those were kind of my first two steps out of college, were just kind of discerning that vocational element too.
So you were asking, you were putting it before the Lord. You didn't, and you discerned not to be a priest because you're married now.
Yeah.
Right?
Very happily.
Those who are listening, I just wanted to make sure we didn't end the program them thinking, oh, he's a priest. Wonderful guy.
My spiritual director was very helpful in that in my time in seminary. I think I experienced that call. I love John Paul II. He's my hero.
Sure.
And I think in some ways I just wanted to be John Paul II. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I just want to be in.
So many. I loved him too. He was a hero. He was a hero for so many different reasons. But again, that was another classic step in discipleship that a lot of Catholics, we didn't know this, but everybody should come to the place where they seriously discern, what is the Master's call in my life? What is my fundamental vocation? What does he want to give me? And it was just another fruit of your experience at Franciscan and people showing you how to do it. And the Lord led you down the right path. Then you hit the lotto. You met Maggie, your wife, right?
All's well that ends well.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Tim's going to join us again tomorrow, friends. I hope you can join us. He's going to start sharing with us the heart of his ministry. And I think you're going to find it really inspiring and something that could apply directly to your life as a Catholic in your parish. God bless you. Have a great day.
Each program of Fire on the Earth with Peter Herbeck can be downloaded at AveMariaRadio.net and RenewalMinistries.net. Fire on the Earth is a production of Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'd like to offer you my new booklet, Light in the Darkness. We're living in difficult, unsettling, and even dark times. We're engaged in a spiritual battle that is intensifying. I wrote this short booklet to help you understand the nature of the battle we're facing and help you lay hold of God's abundant grace for you in these challenging times. If you'd like a free copy of my new booklet, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789. Or go to our website at renewalministries.net/FOE, where you can also listen to past episodes or subscribe to our podcast.